email mooney@rte.ie.
We had a competition last week which we ran on the website, and the question was, one stamp features, it was to do with the Unpost new edition stamps which featured the flora and fauna, and it said one stamp features the white prominent moth, which was thought to be extinct in Britain and Ireland before it reappeared in which Irish county in 2008, and you had to give the answer, and the answer was County Kerry, and the winner is Annette Gardner from Galway. So we've sent her out a beautiful presentation. There's a message in here from Cork. It says, recently, rooks were drying their wings on our neighbour's chimney at about 4:30 p.m. when the fire was lit, amazingly, ignoring the heavy smoke. Were they really drying their wings? Well, possibly. Who knows? Would the smoke be killing all the parasites, etc.?
They're fumigating their wings. Uh-huh. So they're known for the smoke bathing, it's called. It kills the parasites, indeed.
So that's exactly what they were doing.
Exactly.
Well, you learn some. Well, I kind of knew it. But anyway, you learn something.
In the back of your head somewhere.
We're joined now by Dr. Matthew Jebb, Director of the National Botanic Gardens in Glasnevin. And you must be really lapping it up at the moment. The weather is beautiful. The place must be packed today.
It
and you've got lovely sun in your face.
Yep, exactly. And I've been enjoying the sun like everyone else outside. And here we are in the studio, out of the sun.
And was it busy?
Very, very.
Very busy.
Which
and
is great.
I take it they're taking their litter home with them, are they?
We've not had bins in the gardens now for close on 15, 16 years, and our visitors have learnt if you bring litter in, you take it home with you. And it is a very efficient sort of idea that needs to be spread around.
Because it's something we're going to be talking with to Mick Power from Quilta. He's the manager of the National Estates on behalf of Quilta, some 7% of the land mass of Ireland, tomorrow evening on Mooney Goes Wild on Monday night. But Dublin city centre today is an absolute mess. I went for a walk early on today before we started work, and the place is a disaster. I mean, there's literally, I mean, Temple Bar is a disaster area. How do you stop it? You've never really come across this problem in the gardens, have you?
Not in the gardens, but we've certainly got it at some of our other sites. So the Office of Public Works runs a lot of varied sites, Phoenix Park being one of the biggest, of course. But yes, it is a problem. It's a huge problem this year more than any other year because of the number of takeaway cartons and cups and so on. So we're exploring all sorts of ways just to bring about that sort of peer pressure from everyone else around you so that people follow the simple code that if you collect any litter from, you know, what you're eating or using, take it home with you.
Well, I hope you do. Let's face it. Most people listening to this programme probably care about nature and are not inclined to be leaving stuff behind them. But if you see people who are, if you're brave enough, be careful. Maybe say it to them or just kind of give them a dirty look. Dirty looks work occasionally. Although, mind you, Niall did tell me to stare down the gulls the next time it's looking for my sandwich. And I did try it during the week and it didn't work. I think it thought I was making a pass at it. It stood there and looked glaring into my eye. Anyway, Matthew, photosynthesis. Remind everybody what photosynthesis is and why you're here to talk about it.
Photosynthesis is a beautiful reaction, and it is the ability of green plants on this planet to capture sunlight and do two things. One is to take molecules of water and rip them into parts so mm-hmm. that the hydrogen atoms are removed and oxygen is released. And it also takes carbon dioxide and builds it into sugars. So it runs the carbon cycle and the oxygen cycle. And without photosynthesis, you and I would not be here. So it is absolutely vital to the biosphere. And just this week, a most extraordinary publication has appeared. This was done by work of geneticists in Imperial College in London. And one of the bits of knowledge we have is that 4 billion years ago, biological life started on this planet. And from looking at its DNA of everything from bacteria to plants to animals, we know we have a common ancestor, a single universal common ancestor to all life on this planet. What is also extraordinary is bacteria in the oceans, huge numbers of them are photosynthetic. They are capturing sunlight just as plants do on the land surface. And we also know from their DNA that these bacteria are actually living inside the land plants. So the green plants that we see growing around us have got photosynthetic bacteria living inside the cells, and they form something called a chloroplast. Mm-hmm. So they share the same reaction of photosynthesis between these bacteria and these land plants. But the big question is, when did photosynthesis start? So we know biological life started 4 billion years ago. About 2.5 billion years ago, the oxygen starts to appear in the atmosphere. Before then, the atmosphere was made of methane, carbon dioxide, nitrogen. It was totally inhospitable to biological life. And suddenly it converts into oxygen, so that by 1 billion years ago, the whole atmosphere has been built, and sort of multicellular life, trilobites and coelacanths, dinosaurs and mammals, birds, they all appear on this planet. So what these scientists at Imperial College have done is they've looked at the DNA sequences in these photosynthetic bacteria and in these plants, and they've worked out, well, when did this extraordinary reaction, this ability to split water, evolve? And they base this upon something called ancestral sequence analysis. So you look at the common ancestor of two genes and you can see how they've changed, and therefore you can, using mathematics, work out what the original ancestor would have, the sequence would have been. And by this process, they have extended the origin of photosynthesis back to 4 billion years. Oh. Now, what's extraordinary about this is most bacteria are not photosynthetic. They consume things. They create diseases and so on. So we're used to most bacteria just rotting things down. But what this work has demonstrated is all these other bacteria have actually lost the ability for photosynthesis, and it is as old as life itself. So it began right at the very beginning. And that is an astonishing thing, because all the up until very recently, scientists have assumed that this ability to split water molecules was so complicated and so clever. They thought, well, this is too complicated to have evolved early on, and it's taken billions of years to appear after the first life. But no, it appears through this analysis of sequences that it is very, very ancient indeed.
So we're going to have to change the script. In the beginning, there was photosynthesis, Aina.
Exactly.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, photosynthesis is a carbon base, because the oxygen that the H2O, the water, is split, and then the hydrogen then combines with carbon to give us carbohydrates. But there also are bacteria, and they're very ancient as well, that had nothing to do with carbon. They lived away down at the bottoms of the oceans, and they're still there. And these use sulfur, and some of them used iron as their inorganic molecule rather than carbon. And they were able quite well to live on these instead and produce methane, produce not carbon at all, not increase the oxygen levels in the atmosphere. And those bacteria are still there to this day, because when they go down in their ancient machines that can go down 2 or 3 miles in the ocean, they can see these smoke holes, these geysers, giving off quantities of stuff that comes up from the centre of the earth. And this is where these deposits of sulfur or iron are causing these bacteria to be able to be still alive. So you're not messing when you're dealing with bacteria, because they have been able to keep an existence going from the very beginning of time, from the very beginning of life on Earth. So it's fascinating that they've been able to go backwards with the photosynthesis, rather than saying, first of all, there were bacteria and then eventually photosynthesis happened. That the fact they were able to do it at all, however poorly, over a period of billions of years, changed the content of carbon in the atmosphere then to allow evolution to happen at a much faster rate and bigger organisms to increase. And in fact, if the oxygen levels are higher in the atmosphere, the animals will be even bigger again, because the size of creatures depends on the amount of oxygen. And we had huge, enormous dragonflies at one point way back. We see their remains in fossil records, which are much smaller than they are now, because we don't have the same amounts of oxygen in the atmosphere as then. So it'll be interesting when climate change really takes hold. We have more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The world is getting warmer, and photosynthesis depends on the availability of CO2 and on temperature for it to go faster. This will affect things again and change how photosynthesis changes the atmosphere in which our world is. So it's great stuff.
It is. And I think energy production using photosynthesis is an area of intense research. And this oxygen evolving complex that is involved in this photosynthetic reaction where water is split is something there's a lot of interest in, because if we can generate something that physically will generate oxygen and hydrogen from sunlight, we will solve our energy production at a stroke.
It's an amazingly efficient system as well, isn't it, the way that it works? And I know that some listeners may think, well, how does this relate to me? But basically, all the energy that we get in our diets comes ultimately from photosynthesis, either from eating animals that have eaten plants that have got their sugars from that, or directly from those plants. And I think it's really amazing just how crucial this is to the circle of life. We don't really think of that, but if it wasn't for that, as you said, Matthew, we wouldn't be here. It really is amazing.
It's a beautiful thing too, because it is so complicated. It, on the face of it, it sounds simple. It's you're taking carbons to make sugars, and you're taking water to generate oxygen, and they seem fairly sort of straightforward reactions. But in order to do that, to mess around at the molecular level and the atomic level, and the photosystem too that generates this oxygen, it literally traps four photons of light, and using the energy from that snaps off these two hydrogen atoms and generates oxygen. It is quite astonishing, because that oxygen is incredibly reactive and will destroy any biological life. It will consume it. It's like setting fire to something, almost, having oxygen as single atoms. So the whole complex is designed to make sure those oxygens join together to make an oxygen molecule of two oxygen atoms, and then it's safe. It's not going to burn up the cell.
It really is remarkable. It really is. Just, you couldn't design it yourself. Amazing technology, really.
Richard.
Yes, I saw a figure somebody computed that the amount of energy coming in through photosynthesis from the sun is 8 times that the total energy that human beings produce. So that's a very interesting statistic. We're 1/8 of the capacity of the photosynthetic system worldwide. Matthew, the primitive enzymes that produced the early oxygen and way back 3.5-4 billion years ago, is there a continuity between that and the system that the cyanobacteria developed in 2.5 billion years ago? Was there an evolution of technique, of chemical change, and so on? Is there a break? Are there two systems of distinct systems of photosynthesis, or does one evolve into the other?
One evolves into the other, and what previously has held people back is the idea that it is so complicated and difficult to have generated this. It was assumed that this 2 billion year lag before oxygen production really got going indicated how difficult it was. But now we realize it's ancient, and the efficiency of it had to build up so that 2.5 billion years ago, it really kicked off, which is known as the Great Oxygenation Event, which is what heralded the biosphere we see today.
Well, Matthew, it's fascinating stuff. Thank you very much indeed for coming in. Just to remind people that if they want to catch up with the RTE Eye on Nature Wildlife Photographic Competition display, it was in the Botanic Gardens. Where is it now?
It's now moved to Portumna Castle in the Midlands. So that is now open, and you can see the 12 finalists and the 8 recommended runners-up on display there at Portumna Castle for the rest of the summer.
Well, go in and have a look, and we'll be running that competition again next year. We'll start in January, so have a look at what you're up against. Let's take a break.
Take a look at our website, rte.ie/Mooney. Send your wildlife recordings, questions and observations on WhatsApp to 087 708 7031.
And you can send those in any day during the week. We'll have a listen to them and hopefully get around to perhaps using some of them next week. That's pretty much all we have time for today. Thank you very much indeed for your company. Thanks also to Richard Collins, Aina Nilauna, Niall Hatch and Dr. Matthew Jebb. Our broadcast coordinator is Jarlath Holland. Our researcher is John Bella Riley. On sound we had Mark O'Dwyer, and our producer in studio today was Anna Letty. We'll do it all again. We'll do it all again tomorrow night on RT Radio 1 from 10 p.m. And 10 p.m. What's wrong with me? Until then, bye!
Take a look at our website, rte.ie/Mooney.